Hi, I'm Al Lowe, and I'm listening to Adventure Game Hotspot.
Welcome back, or welcome front if it's the first time joining us. Once again, this is Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. Once again, Jack Allen, Josh Cleveland, and we have for the first time, we have one of our staff members, one of our writers, Drew Oney.
All right, fresh meat. Hey, Drew.
Yes.
Hey, good to see you guys.
You guys doing all right?
Drew?
Yeah, no, doing good. Yeah. This end of the country is surprisingly warm for this time of the year. So it's doing all right.
It's actually not bad here too. You're in Alberta, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we got like double the Canadian content here. So all right.
Represent. That's true, yeah.
And
above the border this episode.
Nova Scotia.
That's right. Roots in Nova Scotia.
So we're representing Canada today. And you guys are making me jealous because it is super cold here in the Midwest. Like super cold.
Yeah. Well, trust me, the roles will reverse at some point and not flip back again anytime soon. But
exactly. It'll come for us.
Well, we're not here to talk about weather. However, we're going to talk a little bit about adventure games as you came to watch. We're going to talk about games that have kind of slipped out of our minds, things that we don't necessarily always think of. Maybe they don't get as much credit as they have. They're not games that are always on the forefront of conversations. We're going to be talking about these games today. We're going to go around in a circle. And so since we have our guests, this is kind of be like everybody, let's call it what it is. You guys come on and you scoom all the way to our top five. I've seen the numbers. I know what the numbers is. So we're going to make a whole show like we're doing our top fives. And then we're going to do a top five at the end. So you have to stick around this time.
Double decker top five.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
but not a top 10. Different top fives.
Yeah, two different lists. Yeah.
Drew, you start us out and tell us what your first game is.
So yeah, in terms of games, we're talking about games risk, you know, kind of being forgotten or ones that have kind of faded from memory. Mm-hmm. The first one that always comes to mind is actually, I'd say probably the first proper adventure game I ever played. And it's for the NES of all things, and it's called Tombs and Treasure. So this was developed by Falcom, who is known for the Wise or the Ease series of role-playing games. Mm-hmm. But Tombs and Treasure is a point-and-click adventure in the purest sense, only on an NES with a little NES gamepad. It takes place in Mexico. You're there. You play as a teenager on summer vacation. You're going to explore some ruins. I forget the exact setup, but you end up going there with another girl your age and a guide named Jose. And basically, you're going through Chichen Itza. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Probably not. But you get to go through all of these wonderful Aztec ruins. And you're just looking for clues as to how to get through, how to solve this mystery. It's a really, really, I'd like to say well-made adventure. There are some strange anomalies that happened when they were porting it over to the NES that I found out about much later. I guess it was on some other Japanese computers before, only in Japan. And it's a sequel, apparently, to an even older Japanese game that is also a very rudimentary graphic point-and-click adventure. The NES version adds some, like, JRPG battle mechanics that are totally superfluous. Like, they don't mean anything. It's just kind of a way to, engage the player in a different way, or maybe advertise it to a different crowd. But the battle system doesn't matter at all. It's really kind of a throwaway aspect of it. The other aspect about the game that's not so great is you can soft block yourself into it if you combine two items before you use them individually. So it's certainly not a perfect game by any means, but it's really interesting just as a console RP or a console point and click adventure. Really wonderful graphics, great music. And it's never left the NES, in English, at least. It was remade, I think, for the Sega Saturn, again, only in Japan. And they changed a few things up. They took away multiple characters and just made you into like a single Indiana Jones type character. But the only way you can play this game in English is on the NES. And Falcom, as far as I know, still owns the rights, but they've just never done anything with it. So It's one of those ones I'd love to see show up again or remade one day. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I can guarantee you that my descriptions of these games will not be as good as that, because
nor will mine. Yes.
Barely remember any of these. Like,
I never remember. I can't remember what I just played.
So. It looks like you just played this game this day. For the sound of that, like you just played it before you jumped on here. Wow,
I did. I did a little bit of like YouTubing just to kind of refresh my memory. Yeah. But yeah, it has been a while since I played it for sure.
I remember that game. I never played it. I never knew it had any adventure aspects to it. That's kind of neat. I want to have to go put it in an emulator and give it a run.
I don't even remember hearing about it. And I wasn't playing mm-hmm. adventure games on PC then. I was playing the NES games, but not that one. I'd never even heard of it. Mm-hmm. So
all right, Jack,
so yeah, I haven't forgotten about it. It never went in there. So.
It was just never there. Yeah.
Now it's stuck. By tomorrow, I'll have forgotten. But yeah.
Okay. There you go.
All right. Okay. For mine, I didn't want to go like super obscure. Like, I don't want people to go, oh, yeah, I think I wanted sort of recognizable games that we all knew about at the time, but have now gone, oh, yeah, I hadn't heard about that game in ages.
Yeah.
So this one was actually quite popular at the time. And at Adventure Gamers, I think we made it the game of the year that year. If we didn't, then something was wrong with the voting system. But yeah, it was rigged. No, I'm not going to go there. Anyway, the game is Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons by Starbreeze Studios. Oh, man, what a masterpiece game it is.
Really?
It's sort of it's a single player co-op game where you control both characters at the same time. It's really unique and it's gorgeous. It's got a really poignant story. I believe it's wordless, but it's a fantasy. There's a little bit of combat, I think, or at least some light platforming, but it's essentially an adventure game. But you know, like I said, it was well received at the time. Mm-hmm. But I never hear anybody talking about it ever, not since ever. And it's just too good to be forgotten.
Well, that's, I'm kind of choosing a little bit of both. Some that are a little, you know, outside of our, were very popular, at least amongst the popular mainstream adventure crowd. But then there was some that in here that were pretty popular that we don't hear of anymore. And I'm going to start with one. It is Little Big Adventure. Or also known as Relentless. I didn't realize just how few people played this up until over the past year or so that we've had a couple guests on. We've mentioned it, and then I just did a show with One Short Eye, one of our network members. We did a video on our YouTube about some of these games, and he had never heard of it.
Really?
But yeah, it's well, a.
It's not a traditional adventure. It's kind of one of those genre straddlers. So
yeah, it's not your, it came from the same vein of like Alone in the Dark a little bit different. Obviously, it's not a survival horror game or anything like that, but it's an isometric game. A little bit of action in it, I guess. You go up to someone and you pounce your belly on them and they pop their little hearts out and you get them. That sounds really, really, really bad. But it is a huge adventure. It is truly adventurous. It was a whole lot of fun. In fact, they tried to make another one recently. I know that they are currently remastering the first one. However,
the first two,
yeah. Right? But the new game that they were trying, it didn't go so well. Is that right, Jack?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they made the announcement hoping there would be this great groundswell of support and enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And I think they realized the same thing. It's like, oh, maybe not as many people know about our game as we thought. So let's start with the remakes first.
Yeah, it had a really neat story, like a really different story and quirky characters. It looked really bad. Like it looked really, really bad. And that's kind of what we were talking about in our video. But if you liked that kind of a thing, it was definitely what they were going for, the style they were going for, but it would not translate to modern time. But yeah, Little Big Adventure was first on my list. That comes back at you, Drew.
And I'll just say a little big adventure. That's one of those ones that's eluded me. But yeah, I think you're right in pointing out that, yeah, the impact of that game. Yeah, you can't understate it. A lot of people, it seems to mean a lot to, like, it for being kind of an unknown. A lot of people really like it. And yeah, Brothers, a Tale of Two Sons. Is that what it was
called?
Tale
of Two Sons. Right? Yep.
Yeah. I remember when that one came out too, and Starbreeze, like, yeah, they make such incredible, like, first person shooters, and for
exactly, them
to
kind yeah.
of diverge into a totally another genre and nail it. Yeah, that's true. I have yet to play that one, but I remember the buzz about it for sure. So,
all right, you got to do it, Drew.
All right. Yeah. So my next one, this one's skirting the line a little bit, so you can reel me back in.
Skirt away.
But this one, it's another console one, and it's called Enemy Zero. This one was released for the Sega Saturn and then later the PC, made by a company named Warp, who their first overseas game, they're from Japan, that came over here was called D. And D was like, it was a full motion video pre-rendered adventure game. And it is a pure adventure game. Enemy Zero, I think I would classify closer to something like Amnesia, in that it's a very scary game. There's horror elements. There's even shooting elements in a way. There's too much to get into how bizarre the shooting in that game is, but there's sort of action elements where you're running away from these aliens. But in between, when you're inside like these crew quarters, it takes place aboard a spaceship. It's very much derivative of Alien. In that sense, you're like a deep space mining research crew coming back to Earth, and there's aliens on board. But it plays like a pure adventure game in there, again, with like first person pre-rendered sort of like cutscene graphics that you just move between points of interest on preset pathways. And those sections were really good. Like, it is a pure adventure game where you're solving puzzles, collecting items, kind of working out how to navigate the ship that's on lockdown and meet the rest of your crew. While at the same time having these intermittent sort of stealth or action sequences while you're trying to avoid the alien. Now, Night Dive Studios did re-release D, Warp's first game, on GOG and I'm pretty sure Steam a couple of years back. And I was really hoping that Enemy Zero would be the next one. But unfortunately, the rest of the Warp catalog is still nowhere to be seen. So the only way to play this one is to, either try and get the PC version running on a modern system, or emulate the Sega Saturn version. And I really hope, maybe Night Dive, maybe there's some hope for this one that we'll see it again one day. But for now, it's still kind of stuck in 1997.
Well, with the popularity now coming back with, what was it, Shadowgate? How they're making another game. Maybe it brings hope.
We'll
see some of those old console style adventures.
And the Game Boy is exploding as it a really popular is. New it's, old new platform.
It's silly. So. Well, all of those old platforms they're starting to make gains for them again, it seems like.
Yeah.
Retro's back. So,
yeah. Everything old is new again. So yeah, there's hope.
But bell bottoms are coming back for the fourth time.
Even knowing your games, Drew, holy smokes. I thought I knew adventure games, but apparently not. But okay, my next one is another one that everyone's going to know, and they're going to, well, no, I know that one. But again, it's a matter of you just don't hear anybody talking about it anymore. And it's too good not to be talked about, which is Stacking by Double Fine. It's just such an amazing game. It is so creative, where you're a little Russian nesting doll and you have to sort of inhabit the dolls of other characters you meet, and it always has to be a bigger, like, you have to be exactly the right size to fit into the one you want, so you have to sort of, you're basically body hopping between nesting dolls and stuff like that. Anyway, it's a gorgeous sort of 1920s-ish aesthetic, I think. Anyway, really, really amazing. So if you haven't played it, do, and you will fall in love with it, I guarantee. And let's everybody talk about it.
Wow, Jack, that's awesome. We were talking before we went live how I'm doing a video and an article coming on the website about cozy adventure games, and I put Stacking in there as a cozy adventure game. Like,
it's
an underrated game for like you said, no one ever talks about it anymore.
It doesn't. I know. And you don't think Stacking when you think Double Fine, of course. It's like, well, there's Broken Age and then there's Psychonauts. And wow, they made some great games. Mm-hmm. And well, what about that other really amazing game they made?
I had no idea that stacking was done by Double Fine until I did more research for the article.
Yeah. Now, I don't think Tim Schafer had much of a hand. I mean, he's the head of Double Fine, but I don't think sort of he was actively part of its creation. So, you know, maybe we associate Double Fine only with him. But anyway, yeah, that's, again, let's talk about it. Let's remember it. It's too good not to.
Well, when the 90s started popping and you got all the LucasArts adventure games and you got the Sierra adventure games, many of those other companies kind of, they went under the radar. They flew by under the radar. I wanted to give a little bit of love to a Microprose game. And this was a Return of the Phantom. Mm. Now, this should have been a bigger game. In fact, it sold a decent amount of copies from what I understand, but it just never got high on everybody's list. I enjoyed it. Some people said it was bad, but I think that people should have, they were expecting LucasArts and they were expecting Sierra, and this was nothing like those games. This is more along the lines of like the Lost Files of Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Serrated Scalpel. It was that style of game, that feel, and one that I truly, truly appreciate now, and I definitely appreciated it at the time. But Return of the Phantom from Microprose is one that should probably have gotten more esteem and should be talked about more.
And Microprose was a big name too, like
they were big in the adventure. In fact, I think they only put out 6 or 7 adventure games in a time where everyone was trying to jump in and dip their toes in that. Like the only other one that I could think of off the top of my head is Rex Nebular that they put out, but I know they put out they put out a few. But yeah,
I have both played neither, so. Mm. And maybe that's partly why, you know, because there was not buzz, but when I got around to maybe playing them, no one was ever talking about them anymore. So.
Well, another problem that some of those games came up with is they were late on the talkie games. So they were like a year behind. Microprose was when it comes down to putting out voices. So they were kind of left behind with that. So.
Okay. Good one.
The Phantom.
Yeah, it's interesting. Normally when I think Microprose, I think like their military games. They were kind of big into like strategy and flight sim, weren't they? If I'm remembering right.
I don't remember what they were big in. I know they were big.
Definitely strategy. Did they do XCOM? The XCOM series?
I don't know. But yeah, that's I'm gonna have to look that one up. I definitely haven't played that one.
You're okay. Drew. Well, give us obscure game number 3, Drew.
All right, this one is actually this one's obscure even for me. And I'll start with the caveat: I haven't played it, but that's why I think it's important to bring up.
All right.
And that's Aliens: A Comic Book Adventure.
Oh yeah,
I think this was a dream. Was it Cryo or Dreamcatcher? This is how much I know about it already, but
I don't think it
wasn't. Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, but I don't think so. That was sort of before their.
Oh, okay. It says Mindscape was the publisher. Sorry. I'm just doing a very quick scan here. 1995 it says Cryo, but I mean,
oh really? Oh, okay. All right.
I could be wrong on that too. The thing that's hard about this game is from what I gather, there was some rights issues about publishing it because it was kind of maybe tied to like the Dark Horse comic book license, but also obviously the movie license. And for whatever reason, there was very few copies of this game made, and they just kind of circulated a little bit in Europe and America, and then it was pulled from the shelves. So there's not a whole lot out there. I don't know what the state of it is right now, if you can get it like running
even on like a modern system. I'm going on eBay. I will find this game eventually and add it to my collection.
It looks really cool. Like I said, I'm a huge Aliens fan, and so I just want to play another Aliens game, and having an Aliens point and click adventure, that just sounds really cool. You know, we've had Alien strategy games and shooters, and that's all great, but like there's so many good stories to tell in this universe, and I think you know, slowing the action down and putting that into like sort of a survival situation where you have to use items instead of just use short controlled bursts with your pulse rifle would be a lot of fun. And so, yeah, I don't have a lot of hope that this one will ever emerge from obscurity, just because so much time has passed and Alien's license has changed hands. You know, now it's with Disney. And so, I mean, who knows where this even really lies, but I would love to get my hands on it one day.
Yeah. When did Disney no longer become Disney? Like, they're monopolizing everything. Them and, well, I would say Marvel, but pretty sure Disney and Marvel are all together now. Like, what is
they are. And Star Wars. Yeah,
everyone's big one big happy family that they get to pick and choose what they release and what they don't. And yeah, I don't think this one's on the roster.
Would be a Disney license. Yeah, let's bring those guys in. Sigourney, how you doing? Let's go.
Yeah, I don't know. They're doing some really un-Disney like stuff on occasion, but
good.
For the record, I actually own that game, but some.
Oh, really?
Not trying to rub your nose in it, but.
Oh, I am jealous.
You have the box?
Do you have the box? I don't think I have the box. No. But, well, I'm, okay. Yeah, probably not.
Check that out for me.
I used to be like an eBay junkie for sort of every obscure game and stuff, but I don't think I have a big box. But
no. So did you play it back in the day, or was this like
No, I've never played it. It's one of literally probably thousands of games I own that I will never play, but...
Okay.
But I could.
Well, the mystery remains then. We don't know what it's even like.
That's right.
YouTube.
And if I never try, I'll never know that I can't play it because it doesn't run on modern computers or something like that. So it remains this golden possibility that makes my life worth living. Okay. I am once again not picking an obscure game. This is a Wajedai game. And you're going to go, come on, man. Everybody knows about Wajedai. But when Wajedai gets brought up, it to me, this one tends to get overlooked, and it's Resonance by Vince 12. It was just an amazing game. It was like gorgeous and well-written and really well-designed by Vince 12. And it's just, yeah, a really amazing game. And I don't know why it seems to sort of be the, it's just like the middle child of Wajedai. You know what I mean? It kind of, we remember the new ones and we remember the old ones, but we forget the one in the middle. So to me, that's Resonance.
I only recently heard of Resonance. So right there. Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah. I was going through some of the Wajedai IPs to look through a bunch of those. And there it was. Well, I had no idea what it was then.
No, I know. You hear Techno Babylon. You hear Gemini Rue. You hear Unavowed and Blackwell. And then... where's the middle child? Let's talk about the middle child.
Yep. All right. Well, the next one, I don't know how popular it was. This came out of the time frame where adventure games were definitely struggling, the turn of the century. And if you got a good one, you were doing well. But this was, I had to look it up, a Wild Western adventure. And I won't say it was a good one, and I hate to dog on any games really, but I did not enjoy it. But it was based off of a once popular, or was the second in a once popular adventure game, Three Skulls of the Toltecs, which drew me to the game in the first place. Completely different game. I mean, it was nothing like Three Skulls of the Toltecs. This game, from what I remember. And I played maybe an eighth of it, I'll preface. There was no puzzles. It was one of those type of adventure games that you see a lot of now. They're just kind of push you through the game. Like, it was almost like a farming sim. Like at the beginning, you know,
I remember the carrots. That's all I remember of the game.
Carrots. You have to keep watering your horse. You have to do all these type of things. And it was just a matter of kind of pushing the story, which now 20 some odd years later, that's a popular thing. But to me at the time, I wanted a little bit of a challenge. And I remember Nath of the Way, I felt zero challenge whatsoever. It was a beautiful game. I thought it looked fantastic for the era when 3D was something that was often failed, but it was cartoony, something that I would have expected to have made a bigger dent than it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in Europe it was called Fenimore or Fillmore. Fenimore. So if you don't recognize Wanted as a name, you might recognize that.
So. Yeah, exactly right. All right. Well, Jack, do you want to keep going along this, or do you have another train of thought and then jump back?
Well, I mean, it's up to you. Okay. Yeah, let's pause here. Well, let's talk. Now, I think kind of in Drew's case, because he's picked sort of console only and really old and sort of outdated, it's probably self-explanatory. But I want to talk about why some games hit and some don't. Now, like, I'm not, like, obviously the bad ones don't and shouldn't. I don't mean that. But why do some, like, really good games just miss and other games hit? And it maybe not even as good games, but they just become more popular. I don't know. I just want to sort of explore that topic and find out what you guys think about it. What do you think, Drew?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. It's an interesting one to think about, because, I mean, just thinking about some of the examples we've put up, like Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, like that one, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't forget it. And it is one of those ones that kind of recessed to the back of my memory. But it also did get quite a bit of buzz, I remember, when it was first out. So
at the time,
I think it has the broader respect of the gaming community. I think if you were to bring it up with people, they'd probably remember it. But yeah, then other ones, some of the other examples, you know, why they don't catch on, it's tough. I think in the case of, maybe some of the examples that I brought up, since they've been more situated on console, maybe the audience just wasn't there. I don't know. Like, I think sometimes when people think about like Sega CD or like Philips CDI, they might associate like the adventure genre a little bit with those consoles. But most other consoles, people don't, like, no one bought a PlayStation to play Myst. Right? Everyone bought like a CD-ROM in 92 or whatever so that they could play it on PC, but they didn't play it there. And so, yeah, I don't know why the genre maybe just didn't catch on with consoles. Maybe that's one explanation for a broad, you know, look at that question.
Well, even if they did, though, like, you know, they didn't carry with the next console, right? They remain an NES game as opposed to, you know, like, PC games can be sort of updated and revived and resold and stuff like that. The console games can't unless they're ported, and that's a whole different thing. So, like, that's an extra challenge. But, like, even among PC games, like we were talking about with MicroProse, why didn't a good adventure game by a well-known publisher, you know, hit with its target audience?
MicroProse is a good example of why it could possibly miss. Like, you don't understand your target audience. Maybe you're chasing, you know, you're not being truly innovative. You're not putting everything out. Maybe you're just trying to chase a dollar and, you know, testing out the water rather than completely jumping in and making like something that you're going to make a career out of. You know, like MicroProse, you look at some of their old, you know, PC gamer advertisements, and they had big, bold, two-page, you know, advertisements in there. And that's great for, you know, if you, like you mentioned, like a flight simulator or like an army simulator type of game that they were doing, and boom, it's in your face. Not necessarily for an adventure gamer. You know, they just didn't understand their target audience. The other thing, some of the ones that do hit, maybe it's just people are better at marketing than the others. And you mentioned like Wajidai. When Dave came on our podcast, he says that they did really, really well based off, I'm trying to remember, I don't want to misquote him or something. But it was a time when he kind of fit right into this little niche that was starting to explode. And like, he kind of exploded right along with it. And after that, things were a whole lot easier. Timing?
Yeah.
Story? It's hard to fail with a bad story, too. If you don't have a good story, that's easier, you know?
And that's an excellent point about the advertisements. That's just what I was thinking as I was wondering, you know, like if you were to go back, I don't know the early PC game mags that well, but yeah, I wonder what their advertisement was were like how did they market these games? Because yeah, you're right, with a full 2-page spread of an F-16 fighter, you know, cockpit, you can have like a buckle your seatbelt, dirtbag. Like you can have like a really catchy line, but you can't use a line like that for an adventure game, you know, like you can't say like we'll sell you the seat, but you'll only need the edge for like this or something like that, right? You have to come at it from a different angle. And I wonder, yeah, I mean that's a whole nother broader question that I'm just realizing now as I talk through this. Yeah, how did you sell an adventure game to the broader public from like this kind of grassroots genre that started by like mail order, you know? How did that move in the media era? That's a yeah, I don't know.
And they might have sort of relied too much on their own name, like, you know, Return of the Phantom or whatever, from the producer of F-16, whatever, you know what I mean? And like adventure gamers go, well, oh,
Right,
why do I
yeah.
care about that? You know,
Awesome. Be right there.
yeah, exactly. Okay, it must be good then. Yeah, no. So like, there's a way to mismarket things too, and miss your demographic that way. I'm gonna throw out another related question, but again, Joshua, you talked about this game. It's not LucasArts. It's not Sierra, and it's funny that we always go there. And I'm just wondering if we, as a sort of adventure game, you know, community, aren't partly to blame for why some things hit and some things don't. Are we too insistent on things being exactly like we remember them or exactly the way we want them? And, you know, we've got this defined sort of set of criteria that we want our adventure games to be. And if it's not that, then no, not interested.
The adventure game community, and I say this without any menace or anything,
Yeah, no, we
we
need.
collectively are some of the most rigid people when it comes to our games. We are not accepting of anything new. We've seen it with, like, historically, any type of changes. We're not accepting until proven otherwise. And so the onus has to fall on the new technology, the new game, to win us over.
Yeah, I agree with that. Drew, what about you? You think so too?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I you guys, yeah, know about the adventure community a lot better than I do. But yeah, I think that's definitely a trap that not just video games, but I mean like media in general, like we tend to
True, yeah.
magnetize towards like the most popular, the best sellers. And what I find most interesting, especially in the adventure genre, is looking on the periphery, right? Like look at all the games that were, you know, the whether you want to call them copycats or clones of a certain, you know, seminal game, whether it be like a LucasArts or a, you know, Cyan game or whatever like that. But some of those games, yeah, they may be derivative and they may even sometimes be outright copying, but they probably also had something really innovative about them. And enough people dismiss them as copycats or, you know, not as good, when really they brought something new to the table that just kind of goes unrecognized. And I think yeah, a lot of it, you're right, has to do with just kind of that bias to magnetize towards what's on the top 10 bestseller list and assume that because it's selling best and it's popular, that means it is the best, when in fact, I mean, it probably is, but it might not be. And you gotta pull and see what these other games are really about, you know? So
Well, even those titans of the adventure game genre, whenever they tried doing something radically different, we as a community are, how dare you? Why did you do this? What is King's Quest 8? What is tank controls in like the LucasArts games and everything? It's just something that you got to hit it. If you're going to try to bring something in, we're all either going to have to be patient and wait, or they're going to have to really blow up our skirts to make us love it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you can break through, but I think you need to break through more than once. Like, that's why Brothers isn't sort of remembered as much anymore, because they never followed up with anything else. Like, yeah, we really liked this at the time. Or there might have been some division about, yeah, that's kind of actiony, whatever. But there was never something like not even necessarily a sequel, but not the developer didn't ever do anything adventure gamey. There was never another stacking or you know, like whatever. You know, you understand what I'm saying. That's why like Wajidai managed to hit and stick. They weren't a one. You can't be a one hit wonder and stick. You know, I think that's part of the problem. If you know, if it's these great sort of one off games, even if they're kind of popular in their day, they don't have lasting power if it's not followed up by something. Again, not necessarily a sequel, but at least the same developer that we come to get to know and trust and stuff like that. So, yeah,
it's really hard to compare the era of like Wajidai to some of the older classic eras too, because it's completely different marketing. It's a completely one's internet, one's pre-internet for the most part. And you got, if the teams, you don't actually have a full PR and marketing teams like nowadays. If you're a true indie developer, you have to be really good at wearing all of your hats and understanding all of the aspects of marketing to hit too, or at least to break through. But then again, once you do, you know, Dave, Francisco, you know, Grundslav Games, everything, then you are known, and we're expecting it to be good eventually.
But. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a different time. Mm-hmm. I think you need to be fairly active now, be a sort of visible presence to properly market a game now, unless you're like a super hildy, unless you're Quantic Dream or Donut or somebody like that that has enough pedigree behind them that they can kind of rely on their name to do their marketing for them.
And this is something that's going to come up towards the end with our top five, because at the end, if you stick around, we're going to be talking about more modern adventure games who maybe should have gained more popularity, but we've kind of started to forget about that game. Or that's what we're going to go at the end. And the theme that I think we're going to see is marketing when it comes to that.
Yeah, and just kind of a thought going into that too. I wonder how much had to do with marketing before, with not only breaking new ground gameplay wise, but technology wise. You know, a horse I love very much, but Myst. You know, Myst was really sold on its like graphical prowess, yeah, even though it was pre-rendered. Can we even have that anymore? Like, I mean, even with a AAA game, like people are getting kind of used to, you know, there's a set standard. Could any game, let alone an adventure game, come along and really redefine what like immersion or like technical prowess meant? You know, like adventure games used to kind of have that, at least in some avenues and in gameplay avenues, other places, you know, they had that with full motion video or pre-rendered visuals. But I don't know if you'll ever be able to capture that again. I mean, maybe, but
I think we did. With
VR headsets or something, one day we'll get to that point where adventure games will be the dominant again because of a breakthrough. But yeah, I don't know if you could really like sell an adventure game on that anymore.
I think we kind of did though, but not in the way that you're saying. I know back in the day you had like Sierra, Ken was brilliant at doing that. You know, you had Sound Blaster. Let's bring our games with, and I'm not speaking, I'm literally quoting what Ken said on our show. Yeah, well, I was tying all my games to all these new, you know, graphical and Sound Blaster cards that were coming in. And so, but I think we did that in reverse a little bit. We have now the pixel craze. They're going back now, and now everybody wants to follow that suit. And if you're not pixel, or if you're Return to Monkey Island, what are you doing? How dare you try to be something different? You know that.
Yeah.
But who knows? I think that and Matt, one short, I brought this up on one of my YouTube shows or YouTube videos that I just put out. I think like the Return to Monkey Island is something that will, that style, that of graphics, I think that's something that's going to become popular pretty soon. It's just something that somebody has to jump on the grenade first and see what happens.
Yeah, someone's got
to. Well, they did that, and it did blow up for a little while, probably out of proportion, but
yeah.
And it takes a Ron Gilbert to go, you know what?
Shut up.
You're right. Yeah, I was going to say something a little raunchier than that, but it's probably best.
So what do you say? We go around a couple more times and then jump into the top five?
Sure, let's do it.
All right.
Well, yeah, let's not sort of spend as much time on each because we can talk forever. But...
You're right, honest, Drew.
Oh, sorry, it's me. Okay, yeah. Next one. This one, another console one. Surprise, surprise. This one only came out in Japan, which is why I think it's especially a risk for being forgotten. And it's called Desperia. It was for the Sega Dreamcast. It was made by Atlus, I believe. And it's got a little bit of an RPG aspect going to it. It's kind of a little bit of a dungeon crawler. It's like a cyberpunk sort of point and click adventure, but it is very much a point and click. You move between pre-rendered scenes. You're looking for items. You're solving puzzles. You're talking to people. Very heavy into the visual novel and puzzle solving aspect while also having a little bit of an RPG aspect. This was one of those games that's just, I think, going to be lost to time. I know Atlus has a lot of translating power and they've been bringing a lot of their stuff over, but I can't imagine this is at the top of their priority list to bring over this 20-something year old Dreamcast game that was only released in Japan to translate. Anyways, it's absolutely haunting, beautiful cyberpunk, creepy imagery. Look up a YouTube video if you're curious, but this one I think is probably just forever going to just be vaporware from now on. But I really wish we could play it in English one day and see what it's all about.
Man.
Another one I hadn't heard of.
I know you've given me homework to do after that. Thanks for nothing, Drew. Like
wonderful list here to look up.
Yeah, no, it's a great list, but man, I didn't realize there were all these games I never even heard of.
But yet. I love these though. I love jumping on an emulator and checking these out though. So I'm going to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to pick one. We all associate Dreamcatcher or the Adventure Company with these sort of budget missed clones, right? Mm-hmm. First, and they sort of carried the quote unquote dead period for a few years there, but they also put out some really neat third person games. They're like traditional third person games that they were far from classic, but I thought they were solid games and deserved a lot more attention than they got. One of them is called The Ugly Prince Duckling, or it's Hans Christian Andersen, The Ugly Prince Duckling. A sort of gorgeous game, obviously based on you play as Hans Christian Andersen and you meet various characters from his own stories and stuff like that. Looked beautiful. It had sort of that traditional Euro jank that we all know. And I think that's, I forget exactly, but probably some kind of wonky animations and maybe some dodgy translations. So I don't know exactly what, but that's probably what prevented it from sort of really hitting, but I really thought it was an interesting game. And there are some, it's one of those ones that hasn't been brought into the digital age. So we've just forgotten about it. And I wish we didn't. I'd like to see it. So somebody bring it back.
Okay. I'm going to say a name and I'm going to guarantee that you guys have not played it, but you've heard of it almost guaranteed. Okay. Hollywood Monsters.
Oh yeah.
Have you played it?
Well, that was not in English.
Right. Well, it is though. It was put into English and you could actually play it in English though. Now from Pendulo Studios. In fact, we had him on our show, has been playing it recently. But Decaffeinated Jedi has been playing it. But that's something that has gone to it's almost lore now. It's great for collectors. Everybody, I remember that game. I remember. But no one really had a chance to really, really play it. But however, it did launch the studio. And subsequently, then we got, now we got Tintin and we got Runaway and a whole bunch of beautiful games. But if you played Hollywood Monsters, you say that you played it, I'm gonna call you a liar. Unless you're Decaffeinated Jedi.
No, you can't say that. Two things. Mm-hmm. First of all, Hollywood Monsters basically became the next big thing. It's not a one-for-one translation of the game, but it's basically the same game, just kind of reframed. And also, hang on a second. Here's where you can't throw out that challenge to people.
Okay.
Hollywood Monsters is a game on iOS, or it was at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the original game or if it was, I think it may have just been the next big thing sort of renamed again back to Hollywood Monsters for the App Store, but it doesn't. Well,
the
exist.
Next big thing looks completely different than Hollywood Monsters did.
But it's,
I haven't played the next big thing though. Huh. All right. Well, then I'm going to take another one, and I'm going to take one that I'm pretty sure that
your choice is still a good one, but
I'm definitely going to have to look this up. I'm completely out of the loop on this one. Was it a mobile only game, or was this on PC? No.
This came out in the late 90s. Maybe okay. It had to have been the late 90s because Runaway came out in 2001.
Yeah, in Spanish, and then never in English. And then the next big thing was sort of the anglicized remake of it. But then Hollywood Monsters came out on iOS, which was, I think, basically the next big thing, but for mobile. So they're throwing all the names together in a blender. And
okay,
let's make money a bunch of times.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to you, Drew.
All right. So my last one for Forgotten Games. Yet another console one, and I already mentioned the Sega CD, but this is Mansion of the Hidden Souls. So this was, I believe, a Sega produced. I think it was in-house produced, if I'm remembering right. Another on, preset pathways, pre-rendered adventure game. You walk through this mansion and interacted with a series of different ghosts and kind of made your way around. It was developed in Japan, but it did get an English translation. It, despite the fact Sega really likes to re-release their old stuff from this era, this is one that hasn't been re-released, I think just because it is a Sega CD game, and it does look a little bit goofy nowadays. So maybe they don't think people would take it seriously or wouldn't sell well. When they were doing those mini consoles a few years ago, though, like they were really popular, Nintendo had their NES and SNES, and Sega did their Genesis Model 1, and then they released the Genesis Model 2, as well. But the Genesis Model 2 version didn't really go to stores. It wasn't really a retail product. It was made in a lot smaller capacity, and you kind of had to order it from Amazon. I think it might have been an Amazon exclusive. But it did have Sega CD games on it, and this is one of the ones that was on it. So I don't want to say it's totally forgotten. They did, think enough to, pay the fan service and put this out for the few people who wanted this mini console. But it's never come out on any other sort of collection they've re-released, or it's not available on, digital storefronts. And it's just one of those really kind of interesting curiosities of the time. I don't think it's a particularly good game. No one really remembers it that fondly, but it's just a really interesting artifact of that era of like the power of the CD-ROM and what can we do with it that makes an interesting game. And I would just love to see a port of it or whatever, some way to play it again besides the mini console.
All right, another one to look up.
Exactly. Yeah,
I have that console. You said it was on number two, the mini two. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the Sega Genesis. Yeah, the mini two. It should be on there. Yeah, with the Sega CD games.
I'll have to check that out again. I could don't even need an emulator for that. Sweet. All right, Jack.
Yeah, there's too many to choose, but okay. I'll pick another one that is probably largely forgotten because it has not been brought into the digital era. It's called The Immortals of Terra, a Perry Rodan adventure. In Europe, it was called Perry Rodan, something else, but that's the key. But it was a really solid made sci-fi adventure. Like, it should have been more successful than it was. It was 2008, so the genre was starting to rebound, and it should have been a hit and kind of wasn't even then, and disappeared, and now nobody's heard of it anymore.
All right. Well, this one you're going to recognize the name, but I don't know if you've played the adventure game because I didn't. This is Fable.
Ah, yes.
Beautiful adventure game that most people, when they hear Fable, did you know that there was a Fable adventure? I tell you what. I vaguely remembered it up until Adventure Game Geek made a YouTube video that we made an article about on our website. But it looks really, really cool. It's one of those games that a lot of people are like, ha, gotcha. You played it, did you? Poor guy. But from what I understand, they're coming out with another Fable game. And I'm super excited to play the new Fable game that's going to be coming out in 2025. Not an adventure. But I just wanted to throw that out there. Well, awesome.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Do you want to do a quick just name a game?
go around one time, just naming a game if you guys have it, and then we'll jump into our top five. You down for that, Drew?
So one more game, kind of like from
yeah, just say the name. Past. Yeah, just say the name. We'll go and run around, unless you didn't plan for one.
Come back to me. You guys start. I'll think about it for a
second. I threw that out there at the last second, but
okay. I'm gonna go with Lily Looking Through by Gita Games. It is so gorgeous, but you probably never played it. Find it. It is digital, so find it and play it.
All right. I'm gonna go with Deathgate.
Oh yeah.
That's it. Can't say anything.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's hard not to say more.
Legend Entertainment.
Okay, yeah. Another one I think I'd throw out there is Salambo, which I wrote about it. That'll come out at some point, but it's based off a Drew Lay graphic novel. It's on Steam. It's cool.
Yeah.
Look it up.
I was on my list too. Yeah.
Was it really?
Good choice. Yeah.
Nice.
Salambo. It's so unlike Dreamcatcher's other games that, yeah, it to me, that makes it memorable. But
all right. So now we're going to do our top five. We're going to jump into the more modern games that we might not be hearing from, or we hope that they don't go into obscurity. Or maybe there was a lot of buzz going in and then the game came out and there was, well, less buzz. So we'll kind of go that way. Hopefully we don't piss anybody off here. Because this is more, most of these people are still making games. So...
Oh. Yeah, no, this is not a negative reflection on them. It's a positive one. You made good games. We're still talking about them. We want to give them.
We want more.
You know, more of the spotlight.
Drew, we're going to start with you, buddy.
Sure. So the first one that came to mind, and I'm probably going to be pronouncing this wrong, but it's Woneros. It's from, I want to say like 27, maybe a little bit more recent than that. I did a review of this, I think back in the Adventure Gamer days, and I'd never heard of it. It was just kind of, it was on the list. It looked interesting.
Wait a minute. So then I must know it. What's the name?
Oh boy. It's O-N-E-R-I-O-S.
Like Oneros or something?
Oneros. Thank you. That's probably.
Okay, gotcha. No, I don't know how that's pronounced, but that in my head, that's, I'm going, one?
Okay, we'll go with that.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
It was one of those games that when I was playing it, I actually was kind of almost irritated with it. I said it almost reminded me of like Duke Nukem 3D in the way Duke Nukem, like there's so much interactivity in that game. Like you can look in a mirror, you can give a stripper dollar bills. Like it's just a crude joke after crude joke. And Woneros kind of felt like that. Like there was so much interactivity and most of the items didn't do anything, but there was always a crude joke. Just, you know, get ready in the chamber. And I thought it was a little bit irritating at first, but I've never stopped thinking about that game. And the puzzles were really good. The art design was great. The story, you know what, actually came together pretty well. It's an absolutely magical game. And I didn't get its full impact until I think after I beat it and I'd let it settle in. And I really hope they keep doing it because it was a solid game. It's a really great production all around. Yeah, I really love it.
Woneros. Mm-hmm. Woneros. Yeah. Okay. It's that word that we can't pronounce.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm used to seeing words in print. I never had to worry about, before we started doing the podcast, never had to worry how to pronounce people's names or
right,
you know, how to game titles or whatever. Now it
doesn't sound like that in my head.
Right. Okay. I'm going to go with Jenny LeClue. Detective View. It's a few years old. It's a beautiful side scroller about a woman who is trying to clear her mother's name, who was charged with murder or whatever. Anyway, it's just like really charming and gorgeous, and the characters are fun, and everything about it is top notch. And I don't think I've heard too many people that have played it that didn't like it, but just. I don't think enough people played it because I don't hear it mentioned already enough. So 10 years from now, I can't imagine it, you know, being more renowned. So come on, people, get playing it.
Okay. I'm going to go with Willie Morgan.
Yep. It's on mine.
It was it. Yeah.
Sorry. I came over prepared. So we're good.
Good game. I shouldn't say I didn't have enough time to complete the game. I probably played half of it. It's beautiful game.
And I never, ever, ever hear about it anymore. Heard a little bit about it when it came out, and they actually had got their own publisher, and but I never hear about it anymore. I asked people about it. Willie Morgan, you know, the one that looks like the one that looks like Curse of Monkey Island. Well, it looks better than Curse of Monkey Island, and it's heavily inspired, but it deserves a lot more praise. So yeah, that's what we're doing here.
It's one of those sort of not strange European games, but kind of a little offbeat European games. And full disclosure,
did you do the localization on that?
Script editing for that, yeah. But it's like, I don't get to know the games I'm playing when I'm working on a script. So whenever I see it, I go, oh, this is a really neat looking game. You know what I mean? Like I don't get to, I'm staring at an Excel spreadsheet when I'm looking at the script. So that's nothing. So yeah, when I saw the game, what a great looking game. So
yeah, it's super cool. I'm definitely going to have to look that up. That's super cool.
That's you, Drew.
All right. Yeah. Next one is a fairly recent one. And I think this one got some traction. I hope it does. And I hope it continues to. And that's Wavetale. It's a little bit more on the platformy side for a game. And I wasn't too sure if I would like it because it sort of looked like that sort of like GameCube, Xbox era sort of platformer, sort of like a Beyond Good and Evil kind of thing, which those games sometimes I really like. Sometimes I'm not, you know, a huge fan of that era of gaming. But honestly, this one was just absolutely magical. Everything they did about it, the graphics were modern, but they were classic. It had pretty satisfying, you know, platforming and combat mechanics. I'd say the only criticism I could really have is I wish it was a little bit longer. Like, I wanted more of it. I think that's my only criticism, is just like, I wish this team had a little bit more budget and a little bit more time to make it a few hours longer, because it really was an enchanting and really impactful story. And yeah, just a beautiful game. So yeah, Wavetale would be my next one.
Yeah, you reviewed that one, right?
Sorry?
You reviewed that one?
I did, yeah. No, I reviewed that one just kind of blind. It was just a code I could take. And I was like, oh, I'll try this one. And I didn't expect to love it that much, but it was great.
No, it looks like my kind of game. It was sort of sitting on our review list for a while. I'm going, I'm going to review that one if nobody takes it. And then you took it, and I'm like, don't.
And I think
I still haven't played
Love and Beyond and Good and Evil. I think you would absolutely love that one.
Yeah, no, it looks exactly like the sort of game I enjoy. But okay, I'm gonna go for something much more traditional, and really well received by the relatively few who played it. It's called Mootropolis by Parita Studio. Really beautiful, traditional, hand-drawn point-and-click adventure game about sort of future people from another planet coming to Earth and unearthing our artifacts and stuff like that. And it's sort of very funny and, you know, because they aren't accustomed to the things that we know about. So they're looking at it from all different perspective. But yeah, it's really good and it's beautiful. And it should be the sort of game that is sort of on everybody's list of must plays, right? But it isn't. Why not? Come on. Play it, people. Mootropolis.
All right. As everybody knows, I cheat on all of these. So I'm going to go with the game that was never released or has not been released yet. And this is going to be The Last Knight. And it, for different reasons. I think the developer shot himself in the foot, lost a lot of favor with his following. The game, which is a real shame that he went and made some comments that were not pleasant. And don't condone those in any way, shape, or form. The game that he had built for years was on track to what looked like a great game, but the beautiful pixels and side-scrolling pixels—it just looked fantastic. I was
really cinematic. Yeah, it looked amazing.
Yeah. So, who knows? Maybe he'll be accepted back in the community later on. It's going to probably take a lot of work on his end to make that happen. But
otherwise, we'll see the game. Otherwise, if it's remembered at all, probably for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good looking game. So
hand it off. If you're not going to play it, or if you're not going to do it, hand off to somebody else.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drew.
All right. Next one I thought of. This one's cheating a little bit, but hear me out. This was actually inspired by your guys' last podcast where you're talking about Indiana Jones.
Ooh.
And it kind of got me thinking about what the new Bethesda Indiana Jones is going to be like, because we don't know anything about it. And that's Deadfall Adventures. Now, this was Farm 51. It is a straight-up first-person shooter, I'm not going to lie. But it's got a really heavy emphasis on puzzles. And especially if you're going looking for the secrets in these areas, it really can turn into a point-and-click adventure at times. Like, it feels like you're just running around a tomb looking for symbols, trying to push different blocks in. And it had some great puzzle designs, some ones that really stumped me for a little while. For whatever reason, yeah, this one didn't catch on. It's a really fun, pulpy 1930s Indiana Jones, you know, King Solomon's Mine sort of story. It is definitely a first-person shooter, so if you don't like that in your adventure games, you know, this isn't going to be for you. But it made me think about how you could really incorporate puzzles into a game, and nobody seems to remember it, for you know, in the shooter community or in the adventure community. And I think it deserves another look. I think it was a pretty solid effort from Farm.
That's why, because it is an adventure game and it's a shooter. Like, it is so close to both being. I recently just played this. I hadn't heard of it up until about 6 months ago. And I picked it up and played it. Yeah, I love that style. I love King Solomon. I'm in, you know, like historical stuff, puzzles, fun, a whole lot of fun. But I can see why it wasn't, you know, very popular amongst any genre. It didn't have anything that completely distinguished itself.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Well, I'm going to pick another one that I can't pronounce properly. This is another game that when I was at Adventure Gamers, I'm pretty sure we made it Adventure Game of the Year. So, you know, it's a good game. It's Roki by Polygon Treehouse. Absolutely gorgeous, you know, fantasy adventure. Great puzzles, a lot of meat to it. And yeah, it's like a really neat story behind it. And it's an amazing game, and again, I never hear chatter about it. It's never brought up among, oh, have you played such and such, or, you know, I don't know. So whether it just didn't get enough marketing, I don't know, but we certainly did what we could to promote it. But and I'm doing so again, but the rest is up to you folks out there.
Okay, now when I say Grunislav Games, you guys are going to think of Ben Jordan. You're going to think of Lamplighter or the upcoming Rosewater game. But do you remember a Golden Wake?
Yeah.
Probably not, because I don't. This is something I just recently purchased and I can't wait to play it. But it was one of those that you mentioned earlier. It's the middle brother, you know,
the middle child. Yeah.
It kind of gets lost in the fold. And so we know he does great work, and I'm definitely about to start playing that one to kind of rev myself up, get myself ready for Rosewater, which has to be coming out soon.
Well, we just got a new trailer, so
it did.
They're working on it at least.
Looks great too.
It looks great. Yeah. This is by far the most we've seen of it, and it looks really good. See, we're already talking about Rosewater, and we forgot about the middle.
There it is. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Living in the shadow. Next one I chose, this one's a blast from the past that's gotten a second chance of life. Mm-hmm. And this is the Atari World series. So back in the day, there was Earth World, Fire World, Water World, and there was supposed to be a collection of four games, and they were pseudo adventure games in a very, very primitive way, where you'd have to go match symbols and look for clues, and you got a comic book with the games and there was clues in the comic book. It was very bizarre. But anyways, one of these games went unreleased, but Digital Eclipse released the Atari 50th anniversary compilation, I want to say around a year ago now. And they actually got the ROM and finished this game from the prototype, this lost game. And so now you can play this full quadrilogy, I think that's the right word for four games or four entries, of this really... I don't necessarily say they're good or bad games, but they're so far outside of anything we can think of in terms of adventure games. And I think just the exercise in doing that and the labor of love that it took to get all these ROMs together and make them playable for a whole new generation is really special. And I don't think we should forget that too. So you can play them all now with the Atari 50th anniversary. And I think that's, if you're an adventure gamer kind of who's looking for a real challenger to go back and try something totally different with such cryptic graphics and gameplay, this is one that we shouldn't forget how long it's taken to come to the forefront.
All right. Okay, you've just added more work to me again, because every day I scour through like dozens and dozens of headlines and games and stuff like that, you know, for relevant adventure game news. And anytime I see Atari, I just go, I don't have to pay any attention to that, because they never make adventure games. And now
yeah, they never did that.
You come along and says, yes, they do. So, oh, man. Okay, now I got more homework to do. This is unbelievable. All right, Drew, you're never coming on again. No, just kidding. Wonderful guest. I'm going to go with the Sexy Brutale, which is a really fun name for a very unusual game made by Cavalier Game Studios and Tequila Works. It's an isometric game. It's a sort of a time looping game where you're in a big casino mansion, and everyone gets brutally murdered at midnight. And so every time the time loops, you have to try and learn more in order to prevent each person's death. Mm-hmm. So it's a really neat, and I'm not a time looping game fan because I hate repetition, but this one was really interesting. So, but again, I wonder if enough people even knew what it was. It doesn't look like an adventure game, you know. Is it? Or it doesn't look like Sierra or LucasArts. Never mind. I don't want to.
I had no idea that was the hook or that was the twist for that game. I know like the name of the game, but I didn't know that's the twist. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
The Sexy Brutale. How would you?
You're right. Yeah.
All right. So my next one is Tales from the Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
We don't have enough data to truly say if it's going to be forgotten, but I think we kind of do. And it's Telltale's fault, man.
Although Telltale didn't do that game, did they? Didn't they pass that one off to?
Oh, well, if that's the case, then I feel really bad. I'm going to ring this back in. Don't get mad at us. It wasn't. Well, the first one was Telltale then, right?
The first one was definitely Telltale.
Oh, no. You look that up.
It is Telltale. Okay, I'm wrong. Never mind.
Okay, well, I haven't played the game. I was really looking forward to it until I read the reviews. And that's kind of what it's known for. And now, great first game, complete bust of a second game.
Yeah.
And I think we can say that now, but yeah, Tales of the Borderland 2.
I think even before it bombed kind of with critics, it generated no buzz at all. Like, you know, I thought it would be a big deal because the first one was really popular, but it just didn't seem to be.
I don't understand Telltale's new or soon to be old way of PR.
Non-existent. That is their strategy. Non-existent.
live off their old name, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. We have one more.
Wow.
Yeah. So last one I thought of was one from a few years back, I want to say 3 or 4, called Sanity of Morris. And this one, again, not necessarily a perfect game. I got this as a review code, kind of went in blind. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a conspiracy focused game about, you know, tracking down your dad, and there may be an alien, you know, presence in like this kind of remote village, and eventually you end up going into like this research facility. And you can tell it was made by a very small team, but they were trying to do a lot. There was a lot of horror elements, there was some stealth, there was some puzzle solving, and not all of it worked. It was a pretty messy game, but like, again, it's one of those ones that I think about pretty regularly, and I'm like, you know what, there's a lot of heart in that game, and I'm just kind of I'm a fan of that, like that subgenre of, you know, we're not X-Files sort of alien kind of story. And I thought it was really charming. And I hope the studio continues to go on and try it again and keep getting better.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, my last one, I'm going to go with another middle child, I think. And again, people are going to go, oh, we know that game. What are you talking? Yeah, everyone knows it, but nobody really talks about it anymore. It's Soma by Frictional Games. It's like, no, Frictional Games is Amnesia, right? Mm-hmm. Or Penumbra. That's those guys. Yeah. But in between, they made this really amazing game called Soma, and it's really interesting. It's not as sort of, you know, pants wetting scary as Amnesia, but it's more of a sort of creeping dread horror, but really mature, thoughtful underlying story about what it means to be human and all this other stuff. So yeah, like it's sort of really engaging on a whole different level. So yeah, don't middle child it. If you love Amnesia, then check out Soma.
Okay. So my next one, I'm going to have to ask you guys a question. And if I have to ask you guys this question, it'll tell you a lot. Did the new Dustborn game ever come out?
Dustborn. No. Yeah. No. But I think that's by Red Thread, right?
Yes.
No, yeah, but they are marketing it again.
Oh, so they are?
I think they did. Yeah, I was at Gamescom. I think they kind of came out with some more news.
Okay. All right, well, let me scoot on over. I was going to say, like, what happened to that game? Because that's something that had for a while quite a bit of buzz. I'm going to go with Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1. Mm. Now, wonderfully reviewed game. This is a game I recently started playing, and I'm enjoying a ton. I love the open world style. I love this style of games. But for a game that got as good as well reviewed as it did, and for a game that I think had a pretty decent buzz going in, now it doesn't certainly get a lot 6 months after its release or 8 months after its release, and maybe we don't have enough data. However, I do a lot of SEO research. I do a lot of finding out what's popular to talk about. And it's almost non-existent on there. And I think it deserves to get some more buzz because we need more chapters.
Interesting. Now, that was the first one that went to sort of younger Sherlock, right?
Younger Sherlock. It's open world.
So I wonder if that kind of made people,
I'm sure it did.
Give them pause. Or and like such a nondescript title. Come on. Frogwares kind of missed the boat on that. I like Chapter 1 doesn't like it sounds episodic to me.
It
like,
does.
Oh, okay. I don't want to play something that's
isn't that kind of a I don't want to say a problem. Isn't that kind of a Frogwares thing? Their titles are sometimes misleading to what the games actually are.
Well, or maybe,
doesn't really describe them. Enough.
But I just like in particular calling something Chapter 1 makes it sound like an unfinished game.
Well, I get why they're saying it. It means like how.
Yeah, they're going back. Yeah, started, I understand why they. But, yeah, but.
Yeah.
But if you don't know the context, you just go Chapter 1. Oh, I'll wait until they're all done. Kind of.
In the era of episodic games, that's a fail.
It is a thing. I know. That's what I mean.
But. So yeah, there we go. There's our top five. And wow. I think I've learned way too many games. I thought I was somewhat knowledgeable. I thought I at least knew about a lot of games. No, I'm gonna have a lot of homework to do. It's gonna be fun homework. But
yeah, I didn't want to type too loud while we were talking because I want to get some of these names down. I'll have to grab them afterwards. But yeah, lots to check out.
Well, I hope other people listening do too, because yeah, these are all games worth checking out and talking about.
Yeah,
tell
keep
your friends,
playing.
Chatter,
keep
on Discord.
Keep the ball rolling. That's what we're here for at AGH, to kind of toss the ball, just hit it right back. But
that's right.
So speaking of that, what do we have coming up over the next couple weeks on Adventure Game Hotspot, Jack?
Oh, well, we got next up is my own review. I got to, toot my own horn here. For Song of Nunu, a League of Legends story, tale. I guess I should remember the title of the game I'm reviewing. But yeah, it's really interesting. This is yet another non-adventure franchise branching out into more adventure-y sort of gameplay. So yes, we're taking over the world. So that's coming up. We got a whole bunch of stuff. We've got an interview with Dan Connors coming up from our Adventure Game Hotspot Network partner, Conversation with Curtis. We've got some review of expansions for The Expanse and Golden Idol, and just a whole bunch. We got the Invincible review coming up. So yeah, so much coming. I don't know what's coming when, but check us out every day. There's something always coming.
Yeah, and Drew, we want to thank you so much for coming on, giving us another personality, a different perspective. And that's what's really great about Adventure Game Hotspot. We have so many incredible staff members, and of them have their certain types of interests. You know, some of them are Sierra, some of them are more console based, and some of them like the pixels, but all of them are wonderful, and they put out some incredible work. So where can we follow you if people want to follow you, or if you want people to follow you?
Yeah, if people want to follow me, I think, that's a better question.
I didn't mean that.
No, aside from AGH, I don't really do any social media or anything. My personal website is postrendered.com. So postrendered. And it's mostly about comic books and digital art. Just kind of occasionally reviews, occasionally just blog posts and musings. I haven't updated it for a little while, but I do try and do it a few times a year to throw something in there. And other than that, AGH is probably the best place to keep up.
Well, awesome. That's another thing.
I gotta jump back in. We say we got one of Drew's reviews, Desolatium, coming up too, so keep your eye out for that. And again, I may have totally mispronounced it, but you'll recognize it when you see it.
Yeah, that's how I've been pronouncing it. So okay, good. All right. Sounds right to me. Yeah.
There you go. And guys, thank you so much for listening. Please take a look at what we have coming up. We have an upcoming Kickstarter campaign that's about to launch. It'll probably be another 3 weeks or so. I don't know whenever you're going to be listening to this. Maybe it's out by that time. But for the Adventure Game Hotspot Presents AdventureCon. Just call it AdventureCon. But a lot of fun things going on with that. As we mentioned in our last episode, we've partnered up with the Williams for a Sierra reunion. Of course, we have the Adventure Game Hall of Fame going on. Lots and lots of demoing of the upcoming games. So if hanging out with fans, essentially, adventure game community coming together. So if you want to listen to us on any platform, our podcast, go ahead and listen to us there. We're everywhere. YouTube, VentureGameHotspot.com. You think I'd get this by now, but Google.
Yeah, you'll find us. Adventure Game Hotspot. Follow the breadcrumbs. We're there.
Guys, we really appreciate you. For Drew, for Jack, I am Joshua, and we are signing off. Thank you, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.